I think we are blessed with a life on this earth so that we can uplift each other. And I really think that every one of us has so much power inside of us that we can use for a good purpose. Nine Fan Ki Mai. In the September 2023 issue of The Atlantic, the contributing writer and book author David Brooks writes an article called How America Got Mean. He asks the question, why have Americans become so mean? Brooks writes, the words that define our age reek of menace, conspiracy, polarization, mass shooting, trauma, and safe spaces. We are enmeshed in some sort of emotional, relational, and spiritual crisis that, and it undergirds our political dysfunction and the general crisis of our democracy. What is going on? Over the past few years, different social observers have offered different stories to explain the rise of hatred, anxiety, and despair. The technology story. Social media is driving us all crazy. The sociology story. We stop participating in community organizations and are more isolated. The demography story. America, a long white-dominated nation, is becoming a much more diverse country, a change that has some in a panic. The economy story. High levels of economic inequality and insecurity have left people afraid, alienated, and pessimistic. He continues, the most important story about why Americans have become sad and alienated and rural is the simplest. We inhabit a society in which people are no longer trained in how to treat each other with kindness and consideration. Our society has become one in which people feel licensed to give their selfishness free rein. He speaks of moral formation, on how you can dedicate your life to serving the poor, or protecting the nation, or loving your neighbor. So back to the title of this sermon, what will it take? In the section that precedes the story of the Canaanite woman, Matthew reshapes a Markan tradition of Jesus' conflict with the Pharisees over the tradition of the elders. That is, those matters not spelled out in the Torah. In the context of Matthew's predominantly Jewish Christian community, who were struggling to define themselves in relation to those practicing the Jewish faith, who did not follow Jesus. The questions of which traditions to keep and which to let go were pressing issues. The conflicts in the gospel between Jesus and the scribes and Pharisees were undoubtedly mirrored by the debates within Matthew's own community. These were made even more difficult with the increasing number of Gentiles seeking admission. Matthew gave us a glimpse of this family quarrel, which is resolved by a pronouncement by Jesus that it is not external observance alone that reflects right relation to God. It is what proceeds from the heart. With that, the scene shifts, and questions about boundaries between old and new, Jew and Gentile, male and female, sick and well, holy and demonic all come to a head as a Canaanite woman and the plight of her daughter confront Jesus. Matthew leaves the geographical location unclear. He does indicate that Jesus entered the region of Tyre and Sidon, as does Mark telling of the gospel. He leaves the impression that Jesus only goes in that direction, perhaps in keeping with his own command to the disciples not to go into pagan territory. The woman probably comes from those regions and meets him en route. Mark has labeled her as a Syrophoenician, and Matthew designates her as a Canaanite, evoking the name of the ancient inhabitants of the land, Israel's old foe. The woman's cry, "Have pity on me," is reminiscent of other cries heard in the gospel. When the disciples were tossed around in a storm on the Sea of Galilee, they pleaded, "Lord, save us, we are perishing." In that instance, Jesus got up and rebuked the winds and the sea and chided them for their fear and their little faith. In another episode, Jesus tells Peter to come to him across the water, but seeing the wind, he begins to be afraid and to sink, and he cried out, "Lord, save me." Again, Jesus reaches out his hand and catches him and says, "You of little faith, why did you doubt?" And again, a father of a boy who suffered from epilepsy calls out to Jesus, "Lord, have mercy on my son." The disciples had been unable to heal him. Jesus tells them it was because of their little faith. Faith shifts in demographics, how we engage with one another, who is in and who is out, who is canceled and who is not. When blocking is only a click away, why should I be engaged with others when living in a bubble at times is so much easier than leaving it? On my daily commute, I can take the commuter rail from my predominantly white community, exit the train at Lansdowne with not a diverse group of people, walk to the safety that the BU campus provides, return home, and repeat until something happens that shakes me out of my comfort zone. This past Wednesday on my commute home, a rinse and repeat commute made me painfully aware that the space I occupy can cause some others immense discomfort. As I sat on the bench waiting for the commuter rail, the woman next to me grabs her purse, zips it, and holds it close across her chest. I know that action. I've experienced it before, as probably most African Americans have. By her action, she told me everything that I needed to know about her and what she thought about me and the space that I occupy. We don't think of racial encounters as something that happens in the North, but even on this side of the Mason-Dixon line, to this day, pools, barbershops, beauty salons and churches tend to be divided along racial lines. We may not think about it very often, but there are still lines that divide us by race, class, and gender. It is true now, and it was true back in Jesus' day. So Jesus says, love your neighbor as yourself. But what if your neighbor is a different religion or a different race? In first century Palestine, Jews and Canaanites did not normally speak to one another, and devout Jewish men did not speak to women who were not members of their immediate families. So when a Canaanite woman approached Jesus and begged him to heal her daughter, Jesus at first stuck to the rules of his day. She was a foreigner, and by definition, she was unclean. Jesus was a rabbi, a man of God, a man whose primary force was to save the lost sheep of the house of Israel. This woman was not only unclean and foreign, she was a distraction from his mission. So at first, he did not answer her. As usual, his disciples tried to protect him. "Send her away," they said. I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel," said Jesus to the Canaanite woman. But the woman would not give up. She fell to her knees and said, "Lord, help me." Then Jesus said something very harsh and seemingly unkind. He said, "It is not fit to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs." The implication was clear. The children were the house of Israel, and the Gentiles were the dogs. But the woman would not go away. She said, "Yes, Lord, you are right. Yes, even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from their master's table." Then Jesus relented. Even though this was a woman, a Gentile woman, someone to whom he should not have been speaking, someone who lived on the wrong side of the dividing line of race and religion, even though she was unclean, a foreigner, Jesus relented. There are two lessons in this story. One is about overcoming the lines that divide us, and another is about the power of faith. The lines that divide us are not imaginary. They are real. No amount of wishful thinking would have erased the line that divided Jew from Gentile and male from female in the ancient Near East. It was simply a fact of life. And yet somehow, against all the rules that define his culture, Jesus was able to hear this woman's plea. Against the steady habits of a rabbi and the laws of ritual purity, he was able to be moved by her great faith. And for a brief moment in time, the lines that divide us from one another were erased by the Son of God. Christ's ministry was about healing, healing bodies, healing minds, healing divisions, which leads me to the subject of faith. Faith springs up in the strangest places. Jesus spoke at other times of people of great faith. He spoke of a widow who wore out an unrighteous judge with her constant pleading until the judge finally gave in and vindicated her. He spoke of a man who knocked on the door of a friend at midnight asking for food. The friend said he wasn't getting out of bed for anyone, but the man kept knocking until his friend relented, got out of bed, and let him in. These people of great faith did not give up. Like the Canaanite woman, they would allow no refusal, no insult, no disappointment deter them. They would not take no for an answer. My hunch is that most of us tend to think of faith as something that resembles quiet acceptance, even passive resignation. But the Bible portrays people of faith as anything but passive. Abraham, the great man of faith, actually argued with God to spare the city of Sodom. Jacob wrestled with God and would not let go until he received the blessing. Job demanded that God come down from heaven and give him his day in court. Thomas demanded that the risen Christ appear before him so he could touch his wounds. All of these were people of faith who would not let go of God. They were like the Canaanite woman who, by her unflagging persistence, managed to get Jesus to change his mind. Faith is often the exact opposite of patience, acceptance, or resignation. In fact, faith looks at the way the world is and demands something better. Faith is Rosa Parks refusing to move to the rear of the bus. Faith is Nelson Mandela risking his life and his freedom because he refused to accept apartheid as the way things must always be. Faith is hopping off a boat and swimming to help a coworker as he is being attacked. Faith is being the African-American female judge in America who stands up to the slings and arrows with a superhero force field of faith. Faith is praying for and supporting by whatever means we are able to do so for our brothers and sisters in Maui. Faith is seeing beyond the lines that presently divide us to a vision of God's reign on earth. The Bible says that faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things unseen. The evidence of things unseen. Faith is living evidence that God's reign of love and justice can begin right here on earth. The David Brooks article doesn't end with doom and gloom. He states that moral ecologies have been seeded and tended by people who think and talk in moral terms, who try to model and inculcate moral behavior, who understand that we have to build a moral community because on our own, we are selfish and flawed. Moral formation is best when it is humble. It means giving people the skills and habits that will help them be considerate to others in complex life situations. It means helping people behave in ways that make other people feel included, seen, and respected. Faith does not give up or give in. Faith is the courage to refuse to accept a world that falls short of the reign of God. Faith is a gift from Christ himself, who stretched out his arms of love on the hard wood of the cross, that all might come within the reach of his saving embrace. Amen.